Welcome to Movie Mastery. I am your host, John. Over there, the other host, Jeff.
Hi.
And there. We watch the movies that you recommend, and we don't really know what we're going to see until we sit down to watch it. This one actually physically sent a copy in.
Yeah, quite a while ago. It's just been sitting there.
Yeah, it's been waiting for it. It's time in the light, and now it is finally here. It's time for us, all of us, to have our world get a little spiced up.
That's right. We watched Dune.
Man, I was about to say I would prefer that, but I don't know that I would.
Dune is about 4.5-5 hours long.
Exactly.
The version that people actually watch these days. Yeah, it is a slog.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, wait. No, I actually think I would prefer watching Spice World to Dune.
Yeah, the new Dune that's being made right now, I think their plan to get around how boring that book would be when you try and film it is to just completely fill it with every single famous person there's ever been.
I mean, that's what they did in the first one.
Yeah, there's a few famous people, not as many as there are. I mean, Kyle MacLachlan wasn't at the height of his power when they made that movie. He was pretty much at the nadir of his power.
No way. Everyone wanted a little bite out of the MacLachlan.
Yeah, and Elizabeth Berkley or whatever got it. A few years later, she got a big bite of him in a swimming pool where she had like a stroke or something. I could never tell what that was supposed to be.
What?
In Showgirls.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, that pool sex scene where she just sort of jerks around.
Yeah, it's a very weird scene.
Yeah, it's all the sex scenes in that movie are weird. It's like she had never had sex before and figured it was just sort of like a seizure you have.
Yeah, it was like, oh, what's sex like? Well, you just flail uncontrollably and then a baby happened.
You basically desperately try to escape the penis.
As do we all.
Sorry, I don't know why we're on the Showgirls and Dune tangent. We're miles away from the actual movie we watched, the name of which we have yet to even say.
No, I said Spice World.
I think you just said a very spicy movie.
Said Spice World.
Oh, okay. Well, then Spice World it is.
Yeah. So we were sent this, and I remember back when this was in theaters, and one of my friend groups went and saw it before they went to go see some other film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had got tickets for something else, and then just went into there. They're like, let's check this out. And then when we met them to go see the other film, they were like, man, that was real bad.
I'm amazed they didn't just go home sad.
just see them walk out of it and just going, oh, no.
I have to go home and go to bed. I gotta see if any of my family is still alive.
And if they are, kill them.
Oh, man. It's been a while since we bothered with predictions for a movie, but during the first minute or so of this film, when we were still just watching the very, very intro, like, cartoon stuff, I predicted that it was going to be one of those Hulk Hogan-y movies where the main characters are just beloved by all and don't do anything wrong. And I was wrong.
The weird thing for me is, I mean, it almost harkens back to the old, like, Hard Day's Night kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Basically, this movie is Sextet, but with five people instead of an 80-year-old Mae West.
It's weird that the movie doesn't really have a plot.
Yeah.
And what little plot there is... like, pretty much just completely pointless to start with. Like, the whole point of the movie is they're going to have their first live performance, which, but when we first see them, they're doing a live performance.
They do, like, five other live performances before their first live performance over the course of this movie. It doesn't make any sense.
I know. I don't know why they keep saying it's their first live performance. It's real weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, without going into the full details of it, it's not like it's one of those movies where I watched it and I was like, God, I'm so bored. I was just kind of like, huh, I have not heard like more than two Spice Girls songs, apparently.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Sextet? Do you even know what that is?
No.
So it's Mae West. It's her last movie. She's like 80 in it. And the movie is just her, because she's too old to really do anything, just sort of walking from scene to scene as hundreds of guest stars come running in and declare their love for her. That's pretty much what this is. It's just the Spice Girls, who are not actors, even though some of them have since become kind of actors, I guess, a little bit.
Eh.
Just sort of existing from scene to scene as guest stars come flailing by.
Yeah, they just... It's weird because, like, when you mention the Hulk Hogan thing,
mm-hmm.
there are movies that when they're like, oh, we're going to try and do this and we want to sell whatever this character is. Like, we want to sell you on the Spice Girl. Except this doesn't really do a good job of being like, yeah, let's sell you on these Spice Girls.
No, by the end of this movie, I did not like the Spice Girls. I liked them less than I did at the beginning of the film. Because actually, I kind of like the Spice Girls and their music. Like, when it was done, I watched the Wannabe video because I wanted to be reminded of what good choreography with the Spice Girls looks like.
Yeah, it just felt like everything in this was so lazy.
Oh, it was bare minimum.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing was just like, oh, we had a like an idea for a movie we wrote on a napkin, and then we just wandered around London filming things.
Yeah, oh my God, it is... Oh, and let me tell you, the cameos. Oh, all the stars were out in Hollywood the night that this was filmed because because Meatloaf and Mark McKinney were working in Spice World.
So, you know, it's not boring as much as it is just watching it made me go like, this is pointless.
There are large portions of it also that are boring. Anytime they're in the middle of a very long, like a Spice Girls jam that is basically like a Fatboy Slim song and then it has two lines and they're just like, oh, we're going to perform the whole thing live. And you're like, why?
That was the weirdest
do a minute
thing
of this.
In this is that like every time they would do a song, instead of it being like, oh, this is, we're using their songs as a background soundtrack, or they start doing it in the middle of a scene, it would be like, and now they actually do it for like a stage or an audience or whatever. I'm like, what?
And now the whole song again.
Yeah.
So that happened. Anyway, there you go. More after the spoiler thing.
Yeah, so we're going to play a little music.
Oh, I wonder what kind of music.
Oh, I'll mix it up.
Is there a Me First and the Gimme Gimme Spice Girls cover?
I don't know if there is, but if there is, I'm not playing it.
What about a Richard Cheese one?
No way, man.
All right.
I'm mixing it up.
You're going to mix it up. Okay,
yeah.
That's fine.
I'm not going to do what you think. Every time you say, oh, you're going to play whatever, I don't do that just because you said that.
Well, now that you've said you say, you're going to play that Lisa Loeb song.
What?
You know, you say that song because you said it kind of like that.
No.
I only hear what I want to. So.
You're the worst. Girl, who run the world? Are back.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff is not currently singing Lisa Loeb, so we are allowed to start.
He won't let me do this recording if we come back in on the rest of that Lisa Loeb song.
I will turn this podcast right around, mister.
Apparently, just so you know, listeners, I want you to think the Lisa Loeb song, because I'm not allowed to sing it, I guess.
Just think it as hard as you
just
can.
Just keep it in your heads for me, would you? Thank you.
Ugh.
Coming up next, Natalie Imbruglia with Torn.
In your head.
In your head.
Torn in your head.
After that, the Cranberries with In Your Head. Zombie. Yeah.
Zambezies.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing so tired.
He's so mad at me.
I'm so angry because I'm so tired. There's a point where I'm so tired that any goof-em-ups, I'm like, I'm not able to yes and anymore. I'm just angry and that someone is trying to joke at me.
Oh, just because I told you like an hour and a half's worth of extremely bad unicorn jokes today.
Oh, God, just everything today has been like, hey, man, hey, you want to be annoyed at stuff? I'm like, yeah, I do.
Okay, well, here, why don't we just turn to a brighter subject, John? So Spice World, the movie.
Yeah. So it starts out with like a Bond type opening.
Yeah, where the girls are the sexy girls in the beginning of the Bond song.
And it does that thing where it's like the silhouette dancing is like the colors shift in the background. And
I think there's something like three different Bond homage things contained throughout the course of this movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, it has Roger Moore as a character.
Yeah, and then also there's a part where they imagine what they would look like in a... This movie is a lot of the characters imagining what they would look like. Like, this is Elmo's World starring the Spice Girls.
I was about to say, their tour bus is basically Elmo's World for the Spice Girls.
Look, our goldfish is imagining what we'd look like as babies.
And now let's ask a baby about girl power.
Okay,
what do you think about girl power, baby?
Okay, kiss, kiss. Sorry, I can verbatim repeat an Elmo's World thing, John. I
know.
My life has
changed. You have a baby.
Yeah. So it opens with a Bond-style opening, but it morphs into them doing an actual concert.
Yeah, because it starts, and it's basically like the Bond thing with their song in the background,
mm-hmm.
but then it shows them just doing the song at a concert, and this is the first of several times where they will be performing live
mm-hmm.
before they do their first live
performance. They're very clearly live. There's a large audience in front of them. And then also their full performing band is behind them. And we get a couple of different bits of setup over the course of this song. And I cannot tell you which one it is because I don't remember Spice Girls songs that well.
No.
But anyway, we see her manager, played by Richard Grant, who's kind of just yelling and ordering things around from the sidelines to no effect. We also see a dude setting up kind of a documentary crew, and it's Alan Cumming.
Yeah. Alan Cumming is wasted in this.
He's completely tangential.
I mean, not only that they're wasting his talent, but he is just pissed drunk.
Yeah.
And he's so wasted in this.
Yeah, he's a fine British hello. But yeah, there's like a scene in the middle of the movie where he gets to say one thing to the Spice Girls and then never again until the credits are rolling.
Yeah, I mean, the whole joke with Alan Cumming's character in this is he's supposed to be doing a documentary, but he never is allowed to just get anywhere near them.
Yeah.
Like, every time he wants to do shots of them doing stuff, they're just like, no, get out of here, or he can't get in to see them.
Yeah. Or he's just following behind them in a worse car or a worse boat.
Yeah.
And anytime he does actually film anything, it's just cinema verite shots of himself anyway. So I think they want to try and send him up as sort of a pretentious, artistic documentary maker.
Well, yeah, his whole character is like, oh, I'm going to rip right through the facade of the Spice Girls and get to the truth, the real artistic truth of them.
Well, here's some truth for you. Their song is pretty good. It was fun to watch. But the moment it's over and they start talking, you realize that at least two of them have the accents that are basically from the parts of Great Britain where you don't get to be famous.
Well, yeah, we've got at least one Leeds.
Scary Spice is from Leeds.
We've got...
And then I think Sporty is
Sporty is got so a Geordie.
She's is so Geordie.
And I'm like trying to understand what's going on here. And I mean, I've watched enough British TV that I'm like, I'm up to speed. I can do this. But I feel like most American audiences, they'd be like, I'm a teen girl and I love them. And then this would start happening. You'd be like, what the fuck did she just say?
I'm sorry, what? And she said, like, oh, flannel blighters. And you're like, what the hell was that?
What? What? I thought they were speaking English, and yet.
The very first time she talks, you're like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is going to be a problem.
Now, growing up,
mm-hmm.
Who is your favorite Spice Girl?
Actually, it was Sporty Spice for me. I thought she was the most interesting of them. Huh. Although, I would say it was Sporty Spice when I first heard them, because she sings the accent bits on Wannabe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as I've matured, Ginger has become my favorite, because she's kind of the one with the big brass balls on her.
See, that's very weird, because that is literally the opposite for me.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, Ginger Spice is the best. She's amazing. And then watching this, I was like, no, I like the weird Geordie girl. That's awesome.
No, you asked me what was growing up, not like what's my favorite in this movie.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I mean, because Ginger's the one who came out with like a lot of theatricality to her. She's basically the Dolly Parton of the group.
Yeah.
In that she's got,
that's what I would say.
In that she's the one who's most brash about everything, and also, she's got them titties, bro.
I mean, in the opening number, they're all in, like, different white outfits, but hers is covered in things that say, like, girl power and
yeah, her opening
super girl and whatnot.
And Jerry. It also says Jerry on it.
Yeah,
Jerry Spice
true.
Or something. It is, it's probably the worst of the opening outfits.
Yeah. It's just great that everyone was like, yeah, we're going to wear sort of what we normally do, but it's all going to be white. And she was like, fuck you. I'm going to put stuff all over it.
Yeah.
Choose naps.
I mean, I think at this point, I think my favorite thing about Jerry in general is that she's the one who refuses to wear pants.
Yeah.
Like, anytime you think she's wearing pants, she's not. She's actually got a bathing suit on, and she's hiding the fact that she's got everything out on display. She's just way into that. She's into the V, and I'm fine with that. Go Jerry is basically my thought on her.
See, and I think that's why she was my favorite when I was a teenage boy.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. But to me, it's not about the lasciviousness of it. I'm just appreciating her her energy.
Whereas I appreciate Mel C's energy now.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
Actually, both of the Mels have come way up. They used to be the bottom,
really?
And now they're at the top.
I feel like Baby... Well, okay, Baby is...
Baby was always just either bottom or mid.
Because isn't Baby the other Mel? I thought she was Mel B.
No.
Oh.
Baby Spice is Emma.
Oh, that's right. Emma Bunton. God damn. Okay. Yeah, Baby Spice was one of my favorites as an adult when I was watching their videos and stuff, because you start to realize that all of her dance moves are based around keeping her mini dress down.
Yeah.
Like, every time she's dancing, she's like, oh, yeah, sit down there. Come on.
why couldn't I have got the gimmick like Jerry did? No, I gotta be in tiny little dresses. That's my gimmick.
Yeah, so all of her dance moves are based around keeping her dress down, and it's adorable. It's hilarious.
Whereas, I mean, Victoria, a.k.a. Posh Spice, had sort of the same thing, but she didn't do dance moves because she was too posh for them.
I think Victoria in this movie is probably the least served of the bunch of them. She barely gets any actual lines, and when she does, they're all just about clothes.
Well, yeah.
So she's barely in there. And then Scary, who I guess is actually Mel B.
Yes.
I have not liked Mel B in my adulthood because I've seen that one episode of Big Fat Quiz.
Whereas I think I saw Mel C on an episode of like 8 out of 10 Cats.
Yeah, she was also in a Big Fat Quiz or something. Oh, it was a Would I Lie to You.
Oh, okay.
She was on a Would I Lie to You, and they asked her some question about if she was embarrassed to be there. And she's like, nah, man, I'm already a millionaire. What do I give a shit?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So anyhow,
so yeah, they finish up their little performance here, and we get a little bit of
the audience empties out immediately. That's kind of almost terrifying how fast the audience has gone.
Yeah, but they're all outside waiting to do, yeah, you know,
they run
super
outside
cheers.
to do audience cheers. But the reason we notice this is because right after the audience leaves, oh no, wait, I'm sorry, I'm mixing it up with another scene. They get dragged off the stage to go do a walk and talk with their manager.
Yeah. So the manager is like, hey, we got to go. We're going to do all this. I have like a shitload of things scheduled that we have to do before your live performance. We got to go here and talk to these people. We got to meet and greet over here. We got to do this and that. And the main thrust of this is supposed to be like, oh, it's so hard being a performer. And like so many of the plot points in this movie are, we just want to have a little fun in between, I don't know, dancing and going to Italy and getting free drinks. And
I know that it's like I was saying, by the end of this movie, you don't like them. And it's because they refuse to act like professionals, and they refuse to acknowledge that these people who are trying to keep them on track are their employees.
Yeah, they're basically being just horrible, entitled, just the worst sort of performers.
Well, basically, the movie posits that they are like McDonald's burger flippers, and that their manager is actually their boss. Like, he's the one who, like, and he's responding to an even more managerial manager, and they're just at the bottom of the chain. They're just the talent. But that's not true. They're if they want to stop the bus and go do something, that's what happens, because they own all this stuff.
Yeah,
every aspect of this is their stuff,
and the constant complaining from them that they're like, what? We have to spend like 3 hours today doing a thing. I hate this job. And I'm like, oh, fuck you.
I think the worst example of that is when they have to do the photo shoot.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, we have to pose for a cheesy photo shoot where we're dressed in the outfits we always wear. And then they're like, okay, did you get enough pictures? Good, because we're done. And they stomp off and do their own photo shoot instead.
Yeah. And I mean, the photo shoot they do instead is them just sort of dressing up as
famous things.
Like, we have the Charlie's Angels dress up bit.
Travolta and Grease, and what's her?
Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah, Olivia Newton-John from Grease. I was about to call her Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon from Grease. That would be great.
I would love that. Don't get me wrong.
God damn.
Yeah, but no, it's Travolta and Newton-John from Grease.
And then a Bowie girl. And something.
A Bond girl. Specifically,
we had a Monroe.
Yeah, who's the Bond girl? The one that Halle Berry based her outfit on
when
she was Jinx. The one that the bathing suit with the big white belt. They do that thing.
Yeah.
So
they have a bunch of things. And then at the climax of it, they all dress up in each other's signature outfits.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, like Ginger Spice dressing up like Sporty and so on.
Which is hard to tell and care. Okay, but anyway, They get walked down a hallway right after their big concert, and their boss is yelling at them about something or other, and Alan Cumming is trying to catch them so we can do their documentary. They get warned that there's going to be a lot of fans, although there shouldn't be a lot of fans waiting outside. But when there are a lot of fans, they all run over, and they're very nice to their fans anyway.
They sign some autographs. They're just sort of nice.
And then they get in their bus, which is driven by Meatloaf.
Yeah, an anthropomorphic Meatloaf.
Yep.
A cartoon Meatloaf.
Speaking of cartoon, their bus is insane.
Well, their bus is a double-decker bus that has been completely painted over with the Union Jack.
They live in it. This is just where they live.
Oh, yeah. Well, you go in there, and the whole double-decker thing, all of it has been taken out, so there's this giant open space in the middle, and then they each sort of have their own themed cubby hole.
Yeah, they have, like, quarters of a bus where they live.
Yeah, and you look around, and you're like, oh, this is the one that has, like, workout equipment, because that Sporty Spice's cubby hole. Yeah. So and that one has a, like, giant mirror and a closet, so that's Posh Spice's.
Yeah, and, like, Ginger Spice just lives on a giant pair of lip-shaped couch, and that's her entire life, is this giant pair of lip-shaped couch. That's all she has. And then poor Baby Spice sleeps in a swing. There's no bed there. She just has a swing.
I mean, we do at some point know that they aren't, like, living there.
No, because
they're like, oh, we're going to go home now.
They, like, spend a night in a spooky castle at one point.
Yeah, and there's a point where they want to leave, and they're like, we're going home. And he's like, you can't go home.
That's true. But for the most part, it seems like they refer to the bus as their house, and it's just this weird themed mess. And then, so they'll pile into the bus and they're driving to whatever the next thing is. I think it was rehearsals. So they had to drive to rehearsals, and then we get some Spice Girl, intro Spice Girl business.
There's going to be a lot of points where we are just going to describe, like we did the entire photo shoot thing description out of order. Now, know that this isn't a problem because this has nothing to do with the plot. 90% of the things that happen in this have nothing to do with the plot, and it's just little vignettes where they sing a song and they run around doing something. So don't feel like you need to know exactly when everything happens. But for this one, they have a rehearsal thing in a big, like it just sort of looks like a church or something. I don't know. But they're all getting together to play, and then, like, their keyboardist fucks up a little.
Yeah.
They all get pissed off at him. Mm-hmm. But then their pregnant friend shows up.
So this pregnant friend is, like, the main, not really the main character of the movie, but kind of, like, one of the thrusts of the film, like, I guess.
It's basically, like, the main MacGuffin of the film.
It's an attempt at a plot.
Yeah, and it was almost interesting, because the whole conceit here is that all of the Spice Girls have been friends for a long time.
Yes.
And that this woman who comes in is also one of their friends from way back when, but she wasn't a performer.
No, she wasn't. She's just an old friend of theirs. She's Asian and pregnant, and that's pretty much the full extent of her character.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get, ooh, really anything at all about her.
No, very little.
You know, I like that's the conceit of the movie, given that the Spice Girls were actually formed by a newspaper ad.
I was going to say, yeah, they're pretty much assembled by committee. But yeah, okay, so their friend is pregnant, and they are exceedingly doting about their friend.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, one of the things we learn right away is that her name's Nicola. Nicola has recently been dumped.
Yeah, the father has taken off, so she is going to be a single mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they decided to put that in the movie to be like, oh, man, meh. Or if they were just like, we don't want to hire someone else to be a dude.
Well, in her only bit of non-Spice Girl-related business in the whole movie, there's a scene where they're at a big fancy Spice Girl party, and she's standing by herself, and some random guy comes up and says, hello, I'm Barnaby. Are you part of the Spice phenomenon? And she says, oh, no, I'm a nobody. And he's like, oh, well, then excuse me. And he walks off. And that's her full bit of not business, where she's not just standing there while five women stand around her and just Robert Altman as hard as they can.
It was disappointing to me that wasn't actually the theme of this movie. If the theme of the movie had been like, we are friends and this is a friend who wasn't a performer and the strain on a relationship with anyone who isn't in that performance world, like, that's a way that you can take it and go, all right, we want you to feel empathy for these people. Even though they are, like, multimillionaires, the fact that it's hard to actually have any sort of social life or anything, that would be something you could at least empathize with.
Yeah.
And it would make interesting character development for, like, okay, you know, we have an outside view of what's going on, and we can kind of get
Yeah.
Some development with her and the other girls.
Help us build some sympathy, or at least what it would be like for someone who is not a megastar to be having constant interactions with them. But instead, she's basically something they use as an excuse to blow off work.
Well, like, she shows up here and disappears until, like, the end of the movie where they were like, oh, shit, yeah, our friend's pregnant.
Yeah, there's a point in the middle of the film where she shows up again during that party, and then at the very end, she shows up to go clubbing with them when she's, like, very, very pregnant.
She is overdue pregnant.
Yes, and she goes clubbing with them and dancing, and then she goes into labor there. So her character is extraordinarily minor. She's basically an excuse to make the Spice Girls look like they care about their friends more than their job, but as an audience member, you don't get that from it. You get these women don't care about their job, and that's it.
Yeah, it would be one thing if this had been, like, they kept choosing the job over the friend, and in the end, they were like, no, for this is important. We're going to try and make time for something that matters to us. But the rest of the movie is them going, oh, did we have literally anything that we were supposed to do? Fuck that. That's terrible.
We hate doing things.
Anything that we are required to do, we will do the bare minimum and then fuck off to do something else.
Yeah, that seems to be how they feel about their jobs. And it's kind of, you know, when you're like, I am a professional, I do a job, and you watch this, you're like, God damn, I hate them.
Yeah, it's just,
which is really kind of a bummer because, you know, it was really hard as fuck to be the Spice Girls, and they worked really goddamn hard at it. But they create an image that's like, no, we didn't. We hated working. We thought we wanted to play.
Yeah, all we want to do is have fun. We're basically a Cyndi Lauper video.
Well, notably, when they get done with the pregnant friend, they're at the hospital with her while she's in labor, like a 12-hour labor. And their manager keeps calling and is like, hi, you guys are doing that big first live concert right now. And they're like, it's more important that we're here for 12 hours with this one lady. And even the friend's like, no, please go to the concert. I don't need five shrill friends.
I'm going to be very doped up and screamy. Yeah. You can go. It's fine.
No, she keeps trying to get rid of them. And they're like, nope, we promised and we're going to stay right here. Because Lord knows if we left, we'd have to do any work.
But, this is all out of sequence.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. So, if you want to go in sequence, then...
I mean, the thing is, she... the big thing here is she goes, look, I wanted to have one of you be the godmother, but I couldn't pick, so I want all five of you to be godmothers to my new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another point where, like, Alan Cumming tries to get the camera down there, and they're just like, hey, fuck off, stop taping.
Yeah. Oh, please excuse me, no photography at this time, thank you. And he's like, wow, God, they're mean. But, you know, that's fine, they're having a private moment with a friend.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah.
But they never get to have any footage, ever.
No. Okay, so, that's the rehearsal. And then they were rehearsing a song... and then
they do it again.
They play the whole song again.
Yeah, the beginning of it is like, oh, we're rehearsing a song. We're going to play about 30, 45 seconds of it until we, you know, yell at our keyboardist and then talk to our pregnant friend, then come back and do the entire song.
Yeah.
And then, this happens a couple times where they start doing the song, get interrupted, and then do the whole song.
Yeah, the only time it doesn't happen is the first song because we open in media res on it. Every other song, I guess also with Wannabe, because they do Wannabe in, like, a flashback. Then we get introduced to two of the movie's big subplots. One of them is that George Wendt and Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall. Kids in the Hall are, like, movie makers. George Wendt's, like, the money guy. And
George Wendt is some producer. And
McKinney's a writer.
And they're, like, watching TV going... Spice Girls, those are hot right now. What can we do with that? And McKinney's just like, how about a movie about five girls? And he's like, great, sold, let's do it.
So they're going to routinely throughout the course of the film pitch various dumb ideas for movies to the girl's manager.
Yeah, just sort of in between scenes, the manager will be sitting at some table with George Wendt and McKinney and just going like, all right, what do you got? And he's like, okay, so... there's five girls and they're secret agents. He's like, no, next. No.
And also there's a flashback scene there so we can see what they would look like in silver spandex.
Well, not flashback.
No, I guess it's a pitch scene. But it does a spiral wipe. And then it shows what the five of them would be. Oh, Emma Bunton would be the martial arts expert.
We'd have someone who is an expert of disguise.
Someone has to do that Mission Impossible thing.
And then he just sort of... starts getting a boner for Posh Spice at the end.
We know who his favorite is.
Yeah.
Perennial favorite, Victoria Beckham. But anyway, not Beckham at this time.
Not at that time.
No, Victoria Adams at this time, I believe.
I believe.
Okay, so... So, yeah, they keep pitching him to the manager. The manager kind of looks like if the Riddler was a chav. He's always... Are you just disagreeing with me, or are you just coming to determine?
No, I just think that's an interesting way to describe it.
Well, he always wears ultra-tight-fitting green suits.
I mean...
I guess maybe he kind of looks like if the Riddler was a 90s third-wave ska revivalist. Is that a little better? Because he's got them angular mutton-chop sideburns.
Oh, yeah. He's got those real, like, razor-sharp sideburns.
You can cut glass on his sideburns, and he's got a soul patch. And then he's also always wearing a Riddler suit.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looks like British Riddler. Honestly, I'm kind of sad that Richard Grant didn't get that chance.
He's the Quizzler!
The Quizzler! The Ruddler.
No, that's Paul Rudd.
Oh, is Paul Rudd the Ruddler? I thought it was just someone who knew trivia about Paul Rudd.
No, Paul Rudd is the Ruddler.
Oh, okay.
And commits Paul Rudd-related crimes.
That's right. He also commits... It wasn't just that he has Paul Rudd-related questions. It's that it's Paul Rudd-related crimes.
Yes.
Hmm. A feature exhibit at the Paul Rudd Museum.
A Paul Rudd exhibit?
To celebrate that he recently turned 50? That I, Paul Rudd, recently turned 50.
The Ruddler!
Methinks the Ruddler will make an appearance. To steal the famous Paul Rudd diamond. I'm sorry where that came from. And then the other subplot, where an evil movie... newspaper maker wants to tear down the Spice Girls because he's tired of them being on the front page and getting rich off that.
Yeah, so there's the main guy who owns the newspaper and then some reporter, and they're just like sitting up at the top office of this newspaper and they're like, "Oh, I hate seeing the Spice Girls on the front page. But boss, you told me to write that." "I know."
Yeah, you see, I wrote down Spice Girls, local town hero. That should say menace.
I need pictures of Spice Girls.
But they won't pose for nothing, boss, unless they're taking the pictures themselves.
Zzz. Zzz.
So they formulate a plan to get dirt on the Spice Girls to ruin their career, because I guess that would sell even more papers.
Yeah, they're like, "Oh, I hate printing things about them because... I guess I'm just vaguely evil, and so we want to ruin the Spice Girls because that will sell so many more papers than we normally are."
So I think there's like two appearances of these guys before they actually do a plot thing, but let's just skip to it because it's easier that way and I don't have to remember it.
Yeah.
They hire an evil super photographer played by Richard O'Brien, Riff Raff from Rocky Horror.
And he's able to blend into basically any environment and get in anywhere. So he's like, "Oh, I've got pictures of you in the, like, elevator picking your nose. I got pictures of you in 12th grade behind the bleachers." He's like, "Wow, this guy's really good."
Yeah, he's an amazing paparazzo, is Richard O'Brien. And so they send him off to ruin the Spice Girls, which he almost does. But anyway, those are the two subplots that are going to be running throughout the course of this. The characters who don't get as much Spice Girl interaction time as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not like there wasn't enough subplots. So given that this movie doesn't really have a core plot, it definitely needs those.
I mean, it just sort of every time it starts veering towards something goes off the rails.
Yeah.
There's...
do the Italy scene, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. We get Jonathan Ross in this.
Oh, yeah.
Randomly.
John Wash shows up.
And we get... like a weird scene where they're saying that like Baby Spice can get out of anything because she's got such a cute smile.
Oh, that's right. And then
we get a Poirot scene.
They do a Poirot scene, which not only features Sparkle Motion Lady, Beth something or other. I forget the last name.
But Hugh Laurie
as
Poirot.
Playing Poirot, doing a Belgian accent and everything. Sparkle Motion Lady doesn't even get a line. She gets a reaction shot. And it's just like a Poirot send-up where it's very obvious that Emma Bunton is... evil, but she smiles her way out of it.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
I mean, there's a lot of little dream sequence things, like when they were talking to her friend Yeah. And they all dreamed what it would be like if they had kids.
Yeah, which was at least nice because it was a great use for Mel C's horrific Geordie accent.
Yeah. I was like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got Posh being like, oh, I just send them all to boarding school. I don't care.
Yeah, that was weird. And then the other one where during the spice thing where they're like, they're the Spice Force 5, where Ginger Spice is a master of disguise, which she displays by going into a phone booth and coming out as famed actor Bob Hoskins.
Yep. And then, you know, Bob Hoskins gets to mouth girl power while Jerry Halliwell says it.
Well, there's a weird running gag with Halliwell in this movie where she adds an extra syllable to words. So, like, for example, she'll say, like, haven't you guys ever heard of compromisalization?
Yeah, because everyone else has a gimmick.
Yeah.
They were like, all right, so Sporty likes sports, great. Baby's cute. Posh is posh. And Scary is, like, angry and rambunctious.
Well, she roars a lot in this movie.
And Ginger, they were like, well, we can't just have Ginger Spice be her thing is red hair. So she's the one who reads a lot.
Yeah.
But then we're also going to say she's dumb?
Yeah, they make her bookish and dumb. And then they also do throw one or two jokes about her boobs in there.
Well, like, most of the things are, like, oh, I know a thing about, like, the biggest fish is the manta ray. That's not true.
That's wrong.
But she's like, oh, I read this in a book, and she keeps talking about all these books she's read, but then they give her, like, the, I'm gonna say words wrong, and...
Yeah, so Bob Hoskins has to be, like, girl power forever, I'm way into the feminismization. You're like, what?
Why did you do this to poor Bob Hoskins? He's already been through Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, he doesn't need this. It's weird to think that Bob Hoskins, like, in Britain is, like, irrelevant. Like, people know him as a very good actor there. Where here we mostly know him as Mario and Eddie Valiant.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Sad times for good old Bobby Hoskins.
Yeah, so... Anyhow, poor Bob Hoskins gets one spoken non-line. What the hell happened in this movie? Oh, and of course, Roger Moore.
Yeah, Roger Moore is what I assume is the person in charge of whatever the management company they are doing. And his whole shtick is that he's like a Bond villain. So every time we see him, he's petting some animal. And it's always a different animal every time we cut to him. And that's the big joke.
Yeah.
It's like, at first he's got a cat, and then by the end he's got, like, a baby pig that he's feeding.
Yeah, he's got a suckling pig suckling.
And his whole characterization is every time the manager calls him up for any sort of information or to try and get something, he always just gives these weird sayings to him.
Yeah, he basically gives, like, spy meeting on a park bench type code phrases.
Well, all he does is go like, well, we've got to make sure that the shackles of anarchy come off before the hounds of trepidation get their fangs into the flesh of show business. Anyway, bye.
Yeah.
And that's all he does. And then the manager's like, I have no idea what the fuck that guy just told me.
Yeah, it's very unusual. But there he is. Roger Moore gets several scenes in the film doing basically Charlie from Charlie's Angels routine.
It's weird.
Yeah. So, okay, what else is going on? At this point, they have to fly to Italy to put on a live performance.
Before their first live performance.
And I can't tell if they're supposed to be shooting this as a video or if it's supposed to be a live performance. There's people watching from dinner tables and stuff, so we know that it's...
Well, I think it's something they're supposed to film,
mm-hmm.
but then the entire, like, plaza that they are at gets completely jam-packed full of people.
Yeah.
So
the gimmick here is they're going to sing a... This has got to be the most boring Spice Girls song I've ever heard.
Oh, like the leader of the gang?
Yeah. It was just like, they just kept saying one line. It was just a long 4-minute song that was just like them going, you have to be the leader of the gang.
Yeah, they'll just like dance around and be like, it's the gang, yeah, into the gang. And I'm like, okay, get any other lyric.
You got any lines for this thing?
And then they're dancing around and out come like a bunch of buff... wearing only, like, tight shorts and a sailor cap dudes, and they're like, what is this? We don't want any of these people here.
We don't want to perform in front of sexy men.
that's not our deal.
But it turns out that this is a super deal breaker for the Italian producer of this particular video. He's like, yeah, this is what's happening.
No, my boys are in this or yeah. We're out.
Yeah, the Spice Girls are singing in front of these sexy flyboys, and that is the only way this works.
So there's a whole confrontation, and then they come to a compromise where the guys will be
in... I'm sorry, John. You mean a compromisation?
Yeah. They come to a compromise where
mm-hmm.
the guys will perform in, like, these purple, shiny suits, which I guess is better for some reason,
yeah.
but they get to have their asses out, and that was the compromise.
Yeah, the compromise that Richard the Joker Grant, or Riddler Grant, got them to agree to is they'll wear shiny purple disco suits with open butt parts.
There you go. Because they still want to show off what they got going on,
mm-hmm.
and if they're going to be forced to wear a full outfit, then by God, their ass is going to be hanging out.
Yeah, for Christ's sake. So then, after a minute worth of rehearsal of this boring song, they do the actual song.
Yep. Again, one of those things where they perform the song, stop, have some business, and then do the full song. And I'm just like, guys, please... Please don't.
And then they fly back, and they're complaining about that. And, okay, so they fly back, and now they're driving through the woods at night when all of a sudden all of the Spice Girls at once have to pee, and also all the toilets are broken.
Yeah.
On the bus, because apparently there's like 5 toilets on the bus, one for each Spice Girl, and they all break at the same time, so they have to go and pee in the woods.
Yep.
Which is only a gag where to set up for a Meatloaf joke, which I will let John have so I can watch his soul fall out.
So...
I can't wait to watch this.
This was telegraphed so hard. Because you're like, oh, you haven't talked to Meatloaf at all in this. He's just sort of been the driver and maybe had like a line of, hey, get on board, girls.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't really done anything. So when they stop and they let them off, and he's like, hey, how could all the toilets break down? And Meatloaf just kind of goes, look, it's hard enough to get a plumber to go to your house, and that's stationary. We're on a big moving house. How am I going to get a plumber in here? And I'm like, well, why don't you try and fix the toilets? Look, I love those girls, and I would do anything for them, but I won't do that. Thanks, Meatloaf. Thank you, Meatloaf.
I wanted him to say, like, nah, I can't go back there and fix the toilets. It's paradise up here by the dashboard light. I'll love those girls. I'll love them forever.
Yeah.
It's a better Meatloaf song.
It isn't, though. Oh, and
okay. Agree to disagree.
But it was the second they started talking to him, I was like, oh, here it comes. Like, obviously that's what they're setting this up for.
Yeah.
So when he said the line, I instead of being like, ugh, I was just sort of like, yeah, I get it. Okay.
I'm already at the bottom. I can't go lower. And the women go wandering around in the woods to pee. Oh, and then I guess at this point they make it to that party. They go to that party.
What?
We skipped around and we skipped the Hollywood party.
Whatever. We're already in the forest. We're trying to go back.
Okay, well, I guess.
We're doing this scene.
Okay, fine. It's just that we skipped the stupid Pope shenanigans that way.
I don't care.
All right, fine. So they end up in a fucking giant haunted house.
No, they are visited by aliens.
Oh, God, you're right. Okay, fine. We're doing the aliens.
Yeah. When they go out to pee, they go into the forest, and then aliens come down, and they're Spice Girls fans, and apparently the Spice Girls speak alien because tell, like, oh, we want to autograph here, and can you give us a kiss? And they know what they're saying, but they're just doing, like, gibberish noises.
Also, can you help us get tickets to your Albert Hall concert? And they're like, oh, sorry, love, it's sold out already. Also, we probably won't go to it because we don't want to.
Also, that sounds like work. No thanks.
Yeah. So the aliens, like, have them sign junk. It's just bad. The aliens look ridiculous. Even in the movie, they point out that the aliens look ridiculous.
Yeah.
They say, like, the aliens had squidgy little faces and they were wearing extraordinarily cheap alien suits.
Yeah. It's real bad.
All right. Yeah, I'd forgotten that even happened. That was fucking trash. Now, can we talk about the Hollywood party?
Sure.
They go to a Hollywood party. The only reason I really want to talk about it is because the cameo in this one is Jennifer Saunders.
Okay.
There's a brief moment where I think it's Sporty Spice has to stand next to...
Posh.
Is it Posh? Where Posh is standing next to Jennifer Saunders, who's wearing like a ridiculous outfit. She can't think of anything to say to the society woman, so she just tries to repeat the line from Jerry Spice. Hey, did you? What do you think
about Jerry Spice?
From Jerry Spice. Sorry, Ginger Spice.
Yeah, because the first thing she's doing is she's trying to talk to Posh, being like, "Oh, I think the new Gucci stuff looks great, but Dolce and Gabbana's thing is," and so just a lot of fashion things, and all Posh can think to say is, "Hey, did you know that manta rays are the biggest fish?"
Which is weird, because Posh Spice should be the only one who would be able to have a conversation about high fashion shenanigans.
Yeah, but instead it causes this woman to be like, "Oh, manta rays. Yes, I love manta ray. It's my favorite designer. These shoes are manta ray."
Yeah, and you wouldn't recognize her unless you were into the show, but Jennifer Saunders is one of the Ab Fab women.
I hated Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah.
It was a fucking awful show.
I appreciated it.
I did not.
Well, how did you feel about the British version of The Office?
I also don't like that. Then again, I don't like the American version of The Office.
So you're not a huge fan of cringe comedy stuff.
I'm really not.
Yeah, so that's... But
I don't like Always Sunny. Yeah, I just don't like shit like that.
How about Peep Show?
No, I never got into it, but that's more of the actual filming thing, mm-hmm. like the weird camera stuff they do. I don't like it. I don't like it.
I think the Peep Show has one of the funniest things from the world for me, which is when they try to make the Moroccan spaghetti. That's
okay.
Some lovely, healthy lettuce. Anyway, I'm sorry. What actually happens? This is the scene where Nicola has to agree that she's actually a nobody. And then also, Alan Cumming finally gets a hold of the Spice Girls for a split second, and he just wants to ask them questions about if they're interested in boys.
Yeah.
And they have a couple of quips about it, where they're like, "Oh, I want boys to be like pizza. You have them delivered, and I'd like a 6-foot one.
And I want them to be hot and fresh and no cheese."
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
But who wants a no cheese pizza? Fuck you.
Well, people keep trying to keep that figure, I guess. But Richard O'Brien's evil photographer pops up from a fruit tray.
Right when they go like, "Oh, but do you like boys?" And Ginger has to go, "Well, is the Pope Catholic?" And then they apparently spin that into Spice Girls question Pope's Catholicism.
Well, let's talk about this for a second. Did he get a picture of the words she said?
I mean,
he's a photographer.
Yeah, but he's also shown with little recording devices.
I guess.
So I assume he has that.
Yeah.
It's just weird that they're like, "We need the best photographer to take things they say out of context." And I'm like, wait, what?
No, just need anyone with a recording device to get near them at all?
Yeah, and all you're doing is taking stuff they say out of context. It's not like you need anything special for that.
Yeah, it's because they're not allowed to be bad characters in the world of the movie. It's pulling the Hulk Hogan move, where the only way you can make them look bad in a newspaper is to be like, "They questioned the Pope's Catholicism." And even then, there's literally no reaction from them to the newspaper stuff. They do not give a fuck. The only person who cares is their manager.
Yeah. There's... After this, we have we've got a scene where they get kids won a contest to go on the bus with them a day.
Yeah, they're having a weird little birthday party for these kids on a bus.
And this is one of the points where I'm like, all right, now it's not just you being irresponsible performers, but they're like, "Oh, let's stop the bus. We're going to leave and get on someone's boat that we are going to steal."
Scary Spice opens up a window on their weird windowless bus and is like, perfect. We are presently over the Thames.
And makes Meatloaf stop. They all get off and go onto a speedboat and take off. There is never a point where we see them talk to someone who owns this speedboat.
No, they just dance onto it. One of the things about this movie is that the Spice Girls are the most famous thing in the world right now. So when they come on board, everyone's just like, "Oh, my God, the Spice Girls. Of course you can dance around on our boat while we drive around, I guess."
But there's no one else there. It's just them.
No, there's a driver. You can see some dude on the boat who's driving it. So there's at least one driver.
Eh.
I mean, yeah, so they're driving because he has to be the one to make the mistake and hit that log.
Yeah, well, he doesn't hit the log. He veers.
Yeah, he narrowly avoids it.
And because he turns the boat too hard, both of the children fall out, as does Posh Spice.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh no, but this all gets caught on camera. And that's the kind of thing where you're like, okay, this isn't just taking shit they said out of context and, turning idioms into news stories. You're like, oh no, this group put the lives of children in danger, taking them on a non-sanctioned boat trip and having them fall into the water.
Yeah.
Like, that should actually do something. But again, all that happens is after that goes down, the manager comes up and is like, no, I can't believe you see this newspaper. And they're just like, ha ha ha, who cares?
Yeah, that's not going to stop us. We're world famous and we don't give a shit about anything.
I don't care about that. Now, can I please quit working?
Yeah. So
look, you're all in bathrobes sitting on beanbag chairs. What do you mean you want to quit working so much?
We don't want to have to wear these sticky costumes. You chose them.
They're your costumes.
So, at this around this time, they spend the night in a spooky haunted house for some reason?
Yeah, their vignettes make no sense one to the next.
Yeah.
Because the whole...
It's like a fever dream of a film.
Yeah, the whole conceit is that they have some schedule to keep, but it's just bouncing around from set piece to set piece. So like, oh no, now we're in a creepy old house.
Yeah, they have to spend the night in a creepy haunted house. Richard O'Brien sneaks in to take pictures of them, but he like never actually gets a hold of them. Instead, they all pile into one bedroom and talk about haunted houses and have a memory of how they came together as a band.
Yeah.
Vignette.
We get a like non-produced version of Wannabe.
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of the five of them dancing around in some restaurant.
They're in like a straight up a firelight pub. Like
yeah.
A tavern.
And it's, this is a flashback to the like, oh, remember back when it was just us and our Asian friend?
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a place with a guy who likes jazz, and we sang Wannabe for him before we were famous.
And we spent a lot of time before seeing Wannabe arguing with him about how hip-hop is actually cool. It's like, check out this hip-hop song, Wannabe.
No, man. The whole argument was he doesn't know what the kids listen to these days.
Like, fair enough. But so they do Wannabe for him in a boring version of it, which sucks because the actual video of Wannabe is amazing.
Well, I mean, not only is the video good, but when you have... The whole thing is supposed to be done like, oh, this is our weird, like, a cappella, no production value version of it, because mm-hmm. it's supposed to be, like, us just singing in a, like, cafe somewhere, but it's just not good.
I wonder if Wannabe wasn't as big of a hit in Britain as it was here, like, if some other song that they, because they did a completely different song for the finale of the film.
Well, I have to imagine they were like, look, we don't want to just keep doing Wannabe. We don't want that to be the thing at the end. The only way we're going to perform it is if it's not the album version.
Yeah, well, so they do their dumb version of it in the flashback scene. Then the next morning, they work in a vignette where they are the late 60s Beatles because they're hanging out in like a brightly colored India-style tent pavilion thing. They're all just in bathrobes, but it's supposed to be like, oh, this is a reference to Beatles movies.
Oh, and the... fucking paparazzo guy is there in the haunted house
mm-hmm.
and hears them talking about how they are so scared and they don't even know if they're going to be scared for their live performance that they've never done.
Yeah, that was
and
weird.
So that's the next headline is, oh, Scaredy Spice.
So, okay. Trying to even remember the vignettes at this point.
There's just a lot of little discrete scenes in this.
Just keep happening. Yeah, there's more pitches about movies that they could be in.
Yeah, we got a lot of pitches. We got
there's
more Roger Moore business.
There's a bit where they're, I think the dream sequence about whether or not they're okay enough. It's the part where Stephen Fry shows up.
Well, yeah, there's a part where they're like, oh, man, we may have, I think it's when they like got angry and stormed off. And we're like, fuck you, maybe we aren't going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, oh, what would happen if we lost all of our talent or whatever? And there's like a Stephen Fry as a judge who sentences them to 20 years of being on Taiwanese talk shows talking about when they used to be famous.
Oh, boy.
That's
every
that's
time
a scene.
Okay, so at this point, yeah, they've stormed off from the... Because the manager finally has it out with them, where he's like, you guys are lazy shits who fight with me at every turn and constantly refuse to do your friggin' jobs.
All I want is for you guys to fucking perform here. And they're like, how dare you?
Yeah, so they storm out, and then they're off on their own, having their own weird little adventures, which lasts for 0 seconds. There's no time spent on the five of them being individuals at all.
No.
Instead, we get to watch, we hang around with the manager for a while who gets drunk and hooks up with the production assistant.
Yeah. There's just another lady that follows them around that has no clear role outside of apparently making sure that they have the right, like, product placements?
Yeah. Yeah, we have no idea what she does. But she has one little scene here in the bar where she, like, talks to their manager and she's like, it'd be a real shame if you and I got drunk and hooked up tonight and thus
ruin our professional relationship.
And he's like, well, I'm up for it if you are. And she's like, ah, then let's get drunk together. And then right after that, we get a scene of the five Spice Girls coming together and being like, oh my gosh, you're all here. We're all here. How long has it been?
Oh, let's go, days.
Let's go and get a fish and chips. And you're like, yeah, but the concert hasn't happened yet. So it's been like less than a day.
Yeah. The wistful, oh, it's good to see you again after the, I don't know, 2 hours we've been apart at
this
point.
There's no scenes of them not together.
And then they're like, all right, well, fuck it. Now we're going to go get our pregnant friend and drag her to a loud club when she's way past overdue. That's what a pregnant lady wants.
Mm-hmm. That's our godmother present to her. So they take her to a club where a dance version of some Spice Girl song is playing.
The one good joke in this is it's this dance club where there's basically every version of a club is here. So you have some people that are in like weird bondage stuff. Mm-hmm. Some people are kind of in like goth gear, dance gear.
There were a couple of interesting trans out, or not trans, I should say drag outfits.
And so at one point, one of them goes, what is the dress code here?
Yeah, it was Posh Spice. She's like, guys, what the hell? How am I don't know how. What's the dress code?
And it was great. I was like, yeah. That's an actual funny scene. Good for you. You did it.
A decent gag about how movie clubs are usually ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they dance around for a while, and then Baby Spice sees that their friend's water has broken.
And away they go to try and get her to a hospital. And
so
they
get the standard hysterical people during a pregnancy routine where they're like, oh, I'm going to boil water. Oh, no. She should keep her legs closed. Oh, someone call an ambulance. No time for an ambulance kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And eventually they just have Meatloaf drive them to the hospital.
Yep. And there they spend a long time.
An especially mean joke from Scary Spice here.
What, the...
The part where Ginger Spice is like, well, I've read a book about childbirth. In order to stop the baby coming out, you should close your legs right now.
Oh, you should have done that 9 months ago.
Fuck you, Scary Spice. She carried the baby to term. You respect that baby.
Respect that baby.
That's not godmother language.
But it's a joke. And she laughs at it and is like, don't make me laugh. Yeah. Oh.
I mean, they also point out that she can't really have a baby at the moment. She's still wearing her stockings.
Yeah.
But yeah, they get her to the hospital and they're all standing around her, yelling at her to push or to relax and so on. And this is the gag I actually liked, is that they're all yelling at her to push and to breathe and so on. There's no one else in the room. And then a nurse comes in. She's like, what are you doing? She's going to be here for like another 12 hours.
Stop it. Get out of here.
I was like, oh, look at that. They're going to do a realistic birth thing here where they're going to point out that it doesn't happen immediately.
Yeah. Your water doesn't just break and then a baby falls out of you.
Yeah. That's so. But it was great because the nurse comes in, immediately just checks her and goes, she's like 3 centimeters dilated, you guys. She's going to be here for hours. Calm down.
Go into the waiting room. Get out of here.
Which they never do. Oh, well, I guess they eventually do,
because there's the scene where some parents come up and are like, oh, are you the Spice Girls? Our son is like in a coma or something and isn't waking up. If you could talk to him, that would mean a lot. And then there's a joke about like, oh, hey, Jerry, why don't you take your top off? Like, oh, that wouldn't do anything. Besides, his eyes are closed. And then he opens his eyes, and it's Ginger Spice's tits that have saved this boy.
Although she never quite...
Well, I mean, she doesn't take her top off, but the thought of her tits saved
this
boy.
The thought of Ginger Spice's mighty tits. And only 3 of the Spice Girls come, because the other 2 were like, nah, fuck it.
I'm not in this scene.
Scary Spice and Baby Spice were like, pass.
Hard pass on scene.
No,
I don't even want to work in the movie that says I don't want to work.
The camera framing only allows for 3 of them, and we are the 2 least important.
So,
even when they come in the room, their mom goes, oh, little Barnathew or whatever. The Spice...
Barnathew?
Some of the Spice...
Oh, little Barnathew von Higglesby.
Some of the Spice Girls are here to talk to you. We couldn't get all of the Spice Girls.
You're not that important.
So Barnathew wakes up.
Good for them. Yeah. Now, we have the stuff that's going down at the venue where the manager is freaking out and they've got people showing up and he doesn't know what's going on and they're not answering their phones because they're all trying to be supportive of baby.
And when they do answer their phone, it's just a yell. Because the manager finally gets a hold of one of them, and he's like, I think it's Mel C. And he's like, hey, your concert starts in like 10 minutes here at Albert Hall. You know, the one that was your idea and that you wanted to do. And she's like, how dare you? We're trying to be supportive of a friend. Nothing could be more important. And he's like, well, I mean, it's not really me that you're disappointing. It's your fan base. Like all
the giant fan base you have.
He doesn't say any of this. But what I was imagining him being like, oh, well, I guess if you want to disappoint all the, like, preteen girls, like little 10 and 12 year olds that spent hundreds of pounds so they could be here and see you. But okay, I'll go tell them that you didn't care about your show that you promised to do for them.
Yeah.
I'll just go out on stage and tell them that.
Ugh. So the baby is born, and then at that point, finally, she's like, all right, now I can convince you to get the fuck out here and go do your job.
Well, sort of. What happens is Mark McKinney and George Wendt show up, corner the manager guy, and they're like, hey, just let us do those 5 minutes, do another movie pitch. And the movie pitch is the end of this movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, they get out and they take the bus. They steal the bus that Meatloaf had because Meatloaf is sleeping in the dirt somewhere.
Yeah, he just finds a gutter and lays down.
I mean,
it's pretty prophetic of what Meatloaf's career would be.
But as soon as they start driving out and Posh drives this bus, then McKinney and Wendt start pitching what the end of this movie will be, and it just keeps cutting back to them doing it.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, now, for some reason, all of them are standing on the bus.
Why?
Except for Posh, because she's driving.
That's the rules.
The rules of storytelling. And they just keep increasing the situation with one reasonably okay gag where they
have to jump the bus because the bridge is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And George Wendt's like, man, that would be really expensive. And then it cuts to
like a puppet bus.
Yeah, just like a toy bus going over a toy bridge with like just a blue sheet in the background. He's like, oh, wait, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, so that was an okay gag. And then McKinney tries to introduce a bomb late in the scenario. He's like, and then they find a bomb on the bus. Oh, and also Richard Grant at this point corners them in the hospital for, I guess, to find more incriminating photos, but then runs
not
into
Richard Grant.
I'm sorry, Richard O'Brien playing Clifford, the evil photographer. But he runs into a wall while trying to get away from them, and it causes him to change his life and be nice to them instead.
Yeah, he's like, oh, now that you've caught me, I realize I've wasted my life on this. I'll be a good person now.
So, but anyway, yeah, they have to. McKinney introduces the concept of a speed style bomb on the bus way too late in the story, and so their producer's like, "No, I don't even want to deal with a bomb on the bus scenario."
Well, no, the producer's like, "They've gone through enough.
Yeah.
Don't you do that to them."
Yeah, but at a certain point, it's what's happened here is that the manager has been like, "Okay, this must be real. Any second now, they'll come bursting through that door."
Because he goes, and then the end of it is, they get here, and they burst through that door right there.
And they don't.
And then nothing happens. And, yeah.
It would have, if not for the fact that police got them, and Baby Spice had to smile out of the police.
Yeah, it's a callback to when they said that she could smile and get out anything.
Yeah, I want you to understand how funny it was from the tone of my voice.
We then get a scene where fucking Alan Cummings' group is filming Richard Grant, and he's just sitting there, and he's like, okay, I know what we're going to do. We're going to have the lights will start, and the band starts playing. And then the lights come up, and I'll go center stage, and then I'll hang myself. And he just, like, has this noose, and Alan Cummings is like, yes, this is great.
Yeah, don't stop him. This is good. This is the best possible joke. But, yeah, like, it's so weird that this dude's the one who's like, I'll hang myself if they don't perform. He doesn't care. He's gotten rich off them already. He gets paid either way.
So then they show up right as this is happening. They're like, hey, fuck you. We're going to go do the show now.
Luckily, they live their lives in costume, so this isn't a big deal. They go out on stage and they do their dumb show, their dumb song. And that's actually just the end. Like when the song ends, so does the movie. There's no more business.
And, well, there's the business during the credits, which is that then we cut to them with everyone, like, as a meta thing where they're like,
they're actors
Alan,
again.
Alan
yeah.
Cumming as Alan Cumming is like, oh, you want me to be a like documentary director? Oh, you won't let me do my Scottish accent?
Yeah,
that's garbage.
He wants to be Scottish and he wants to wear a chest wig.
No, he's pissed that they make him wear a chest wig.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, he takes the chest wig off. And it, so yeah, he's being refused to do his really good Scottish accent.
And, you know, they talk to all of the people in there. And
usually with a gag, like Richard O'Brien's character is like, or Richard O'Brien as the actor is like, I don't want to be a bad guy the whole way through the movie. You should give me a scene where I redeem myself.
Look, come on, man. I don't.
Kids are going to attack
see me
on the street
and be like, oh, I hate that guy, and they'll kick me.
How have people not been attacking him on the street ever since he tried to take over the world from the planet Transylvania? Is what I want to know.
Who knows?
And also that one time that he was an evil like gang overlord who made people run through their his traps.
Thief guild gauntlet.
Yeah, his thief guild trap things. And also when he was mean to Drew Barrymore in the movie Ever After. And that's all the Richard O'Brien movies I'm aware of. Oh,
that's the movies.
The sequel to Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, that's all of them.
There you go. So yeah, we get some business with that, and then they do a fourth wall break, like looking at the screen going like, oh, look at these people in the theater.
These two are snogging, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who would be able to fuck during this movie?
I mean, how would you not?
I mean, I pulled it off.
Like, I feel like if I went there with someone I was dating and we were watching this, I'd be like, this is boring. Can we just fuck?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. Seeing as how it was just you and me and my daughter seeing it together, there really wasn't any action lined up.
That's it. That's a spicy world. That's the one, a spicy world ball.
Man, I hated this movie.
Well, I tell you what.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We're now going to get into the little segment I like to call Fuck You, Jeff.
I hate this segment.
So we're going to do our bests and worsts of the film.
Oh, that segment I like.
Yeah. So, okay. Jeff, what is the best bit of this film?
What is the dress code line? Part with the pan across the club and the club doesn't make any fucking sense. And they're just like, whoa, look at that. That's like some sort of drag queen in a weird kind of Eyes Wide Shut outfit. And now a bunch of goths and, oh, we're passing some 50s greasers. And I was like, that's admittedly amusing.
Yeah.
And then they lampshade it. And that's anytime they lampshade the cheapness of the film effectively is pretty great.
Well, yeah, because my favorite is going to be the toy bus.
The toy bus. Yeah. So it's the same thing. Also, you could also there's a tossed off background line about how the aliens were wearing cheap outfits.
Yeah.
Which same thing. Just the self-referential lampshading is an okay thing about the movie.
Eh.
All right. There you go.
So what was the worst thing in this movie for you?
I feel like just the through line attitude of the Spice Girls where it's like they just hate their job.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have something and it's like, we're fabulously wealthy, but we hate being fabulously wealthy, I'm like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah, I know. Like, anytime you watch these backstage concert things, the one thing you usually get is the sense that these people are ultra famous for, like, a reason. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched one of those, like, I know he's a horrible person or was a horrible person, but, like, those documentaries about Michael Jackson at work, where it's like, oh, this dude is dedicated.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a reason he's as famous as he is. He works 28 hours a day when he's working.
Yeah.
He is, and Madonna's the same way. Like, you watch one of her, like,
if you're
going
to put on a show, I'm putting on a fucking show.
Yeah, but this is just, like, these five weirdos goofing off in a birdcage for 3 hours, and then someone puts
like,
them in front of
bumbling on stage and being like, I guess we'll sing.
I guess we're singing the song then. Oh, don't want to. Off of fish and chips. And you're just like, I hate them.
Yeah.
I don't want to, but the movie wants me to hate them for some reason.
Yeah, it was just the exact opposite of what you should have gotten from a film like this.
Yeah, you want to see them be dedicated and good at their jobs.
Well, what you really want from a film like this is for you to come away going like, yeah, the Spice Girls, good, I like them. But instead, you're just like, God, fuck these people.
Yeah, basically, that's how I felt pretty much the whole way through. What would you say is your least favorite thing?
I'm going to say the worst thing, I'm going to narrow it down to just one thing.
Uno thing.
I want to say...
Or Bob Hoskins.
I mean, I want to say Bob Hoskins, but it isn't. There's a scene we didn't talk about.
Oh, shit.
Where they go to a dance instructor.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Like a military dance instructor.
Was he the Leon is getting larger guy from Airplane?
He wasn't, but boy, it was real here hard to track what was going on here, because he was awful at dancing and also, like, vaguely...
He's like he's basically a springtime for Hitler-grade German.
It's just weird, and he's in, like, full military, and then they have to do a song where then they all are in military stuff, and it's just fucking bad.
No, it's insane. It doesn't make any sense. There's a part where they're driving there on the bus, and their manager is like, okay, we're arriving in Dartmouth, so you can meet with the world's most famous dance instructor. Be on your best behavior. And then this dude comes out, and he's like, yeah, I am a dance instructor. Yeah, oh, I'm doing some terrible dance for you. Yeah.
You have to learn how to dance like this. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And then they're like,
happening.
And then at least they just kind of go, you're bad at this. Well, let us show you how to dance. And then they start dancing, and it turns into a montage where they're all in military outfits, and they have to like run a gauntlet.
Yeah, except for Victoria, because she's just in a camo pattern little dress and walks around the obstacle course.
It's insane. It makes absolutely no sense at all.
It is. I mean, it's probably the one scene where I was kind of like, man, this is just the perfect storm of all the dumbest shit in here, where it's, one, none of them want to like try and do anything because they're like, oh, this is a dance instructor. And they're like, we don't want to learn how to dance.
And two, nothing's wrong with me.
Three, nothing's wrong with me.
Four, something's got to give. it makes his horrible German kind of mugging it's like Star Wars Holiday Special level bad skit.
Yeah, so that was definitely the worst thing for me.
I almost want to throw a zero at this thing because I feel like it doesn't count as a movie.
So we're going to give our rating 0 to 5,
mm-hmm.
Gives it a rating out of 10. Jeff, what are you going to give Spicy World?
It's so rare that I get the chance to give out a 0 for a movie having absolutely no plot to it. Like, where the movie pretty much ends and begins and ends, and there's no, you can't tell if anything changed. Like, the plot of this movie is the Spice Girls are preparing for their first ever live show, and during the film they perform 3 live shows.
Yeah, it's... The whole thing being like, what is this movie? These rich performers have to perform. And indeed they do! And you're like, okay.
That said, there's a couple of jokes and a few actors I actually kind of like, so I'll... For things like Stephen Lorre and Hugh Fry...
Hugh Fry and Stephen Lorre.
That's how much I connect them in my mind. Hugh Lorre and Stephen Fry being in this, Jennifer Saunders being in this, Bob Hoskins. Jonathan Ross. I'm going to throw at the 0.5.
Okay.
But I just want you to know it's for the amusing cameos that I enjoyed.
All right.
What about you? Oh, Elvis Costello is a bartender in this?
Yeah. For some reason.
Dominic West from The Wire is in this movie for a half second as a photographer. Oh, and Elton John shows up just to get kisses from the Spice Girls?
Yep.
So, anyway. 0.5 for the cameos. John?
I'm going to give it a 1.5.
Mm-hmm. I hated this more than you. That's fair.
Oh, you definitely hated this more than me. I was like, I'm mostly amused by this because it's all just weird, disconnected vignettes. It has a frenetic energy that stops this from being the things that I would normally give like a 0.5 or a 0 to.
Or that are boring.
It's not a movie because nothing happens. This isn't a movie because too much is happening and none of it is connected.
Yeah, I can see that. But for me, it was a Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm M. Bison. Ladies and gentlemen, I am M. Bison.
It's finally time that John reveals the truth.
It's time to reveal the truth. I'm M. Bison. Bison.
Those delicious bison bucks.
So, yeah, for me, it's a 1.5. You could watch this and be like, man, that was weird, but you wouldn't be sitting there going like, oh fuck, this is torturous.
I there were multiple scenes where I was doing precisely that. That's why I had to give it the 0.5.
So
mostly during the full versions of all the songs.
Yeah, I didn't mind. I was like, whatever. I'm fine with Spice Girl songs. I don't care.
You were on your phone during them. I'm just putting that out. I mean, because you were like, oh okay, I'll play Wordscapes.
Hey now. I was not on my phone for all of this.
Just for the full versions of the songs, that's all. I'm not accusing you of shirking your duties. You remembered more about the movie than I did.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
Because you were also on your phone.
No, I was mostly chasing after a baby.
No, there was the point where the baby fell asleep.
That's true, she did. Yeah, you're right.
She napped right through the last half of this movie.
Which was tough because there was a lot of roaring in the last half of this movie.
So that gives this movie a 2 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot recommend.
I don't
do not recommend.
In good conscience.
Could not possibly recommend.
Would not, could not.
With a boat.
With a boat. Yeah. This was boring and bad. At least it was high speed boring.
High speed boring.
It's one of my M. Bison's mini plans to destroy the American banking system.
So thank you so much for listening to our disjointed, weird review of a very disjointed and weird movie. We will be back, of course, in another couple weeks with more movie mastery. But if you like listening to us, if you want to help out the show, you want to help out us, you want to help out Sage, who's a year old now.
Yeah, today's Sage's first birthday.
Then you can go to our Patreon, go to System Mastery Patreon, fine dollars, good times,
yeah.
.biz.
Head to patreon.com/System Mastery and throw a buck or two our way. But only if that's what you want, what you really, really want.
Well, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
Hmm? What's that?
Something with some caffeine in it. I'm dying.
Something where someone zigga zigga ahs.
Oh, if I could get a zigga zigga.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, like an Abba Zabba?
It's basically an Abba Zabba. That's what Scary Spice wanted.
Yeah. I really want a zigga zigga. The British version of the Abba Zabba.
You know it's way better than the American version of the Abba Zabba. British people, we're usually pretty down on the British here at the network, but...
they get to use sugar.
Their candy game is on point because they don't have to do high fructose corn syrup.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You ever had an actual British Kit Kat? Great.
So good.
Fucking Cadbury's anything?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Lion Bar? Not as good.
Yeah, no, not as good. I'm not a huge fan of those honeycomb Aero bars.
No,
I feel like
but I'll tell you what, British
chocolate.
British Rolos. Mm.
Oh, yeah, chef kiss, for sure.
For sure.
For sure. So anyway, good on you for your sweets, Brits. Boo on you for everything else.
Boo on you for the empire.
Uh-huh. For the imperialism and the Brexiting and all that.
boo on you for all of that.
Uh-huh. And you're terrible. The cars you make are terrible. Just putting all that out there.
But yeah, so if you give us some money on Patreon, you can get some bonus content for some of our other stuff.
Especially you British listeners. I know we just dumped on you a lot, but throw us sixpence none the shilling or whatever the fuck.
Throw us the band of sixpence none the richer.
There you have it.
And yeah, you can find all of our other stuff at SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. We, you know, make stupid jokes and do dumb things, and it's fun. You can get stuff there. We're System Mastery on Twitter, Facebook, SystemMastery@gmail, all that. Get a hold of us.
We're on our very own website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com.
Which I did say.
We're going to edit the part where you said that out.
Yeah, I edit this, so no, we're not.
Mm.
I'm going to edit in a part where you disagree with me again, and then I play a loop of me doing that over and over again. And then I'm going to edit in a lion roaring for some reason.
I hope you do those things.
That would be amazing, but I'm lazy, so none of that is going to happen.
Roar. Well, what do you know?
What will happen is we'll be back in 2 weeks with more movie mastery, but until then, you have a good one.